This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
If we go back to the basic principles of food miles, we need to battle climate change. We need to grow more locally stuff. Allotments isn't a way of doing it. I'm not saying we're going to be self-sufficient as a nation. That's just hard to think. And no, allotments are not going to feed everybody. But every little allotment reduces it. You've got biodiversity. Now, a recent study showed that an allotment is 70% more biodiverse in insects mass compared to countryside, not cities, countryside.
What? Hello and welcome to this Tread Lightly podcast from us at the Raynham Eco Hub. My name is Kaylee.
And I'm Liz.
And this podcast is where we delve a little bit deeper into those conversations with local everyday heroes that are doing small and impactful changes. We hope that you get as much out of this as me and Liz do and that you also laugh just as much too. We can't wait to share this episode with you today because Liz and I get to chat with the amazing Stuart Bourne this lunchtime all about his gardening world. We learn about his time spent at Buckingham Palace looking after the Queen's roses to now having a family allotment here in Raynham with his two children and his wonderful wife, Jo. I don't know about you, but I am not really a confident gardener and I don't really kind of know what I'm meant to be doing to grow what and when. But after this episode, I feel really inspired to just get out in my garden and not wait to be perfect and have all of the answers, to just go out and give it a go. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that it inspires you in the way that it has me too. Stuart Bourne.
Hey, Stu.
Hi there. Nice to be on the podcast.
Nice to have you. Nice to have you join us. Thank you for coming on. Very short notice as well. I was like, Stu, you're free? And he was free.
Well, you're lucky you've got me on one of my few days off now. So.
Very cool.
And I'm really excited to hear about this because we know you as the famous gardener, of course. I think the whole of Raynham knows you as the famous gardener. And I'm going to not steal your thunder and you can absolutely tell us why you are the famous gardener. But today we're going to be talking all about allotments. Is that right?
Yeah.
And just your love of the gardening world. Why have you not got your own gardening show? Can I just ask?
It's not for the want of trying.
Oh. You should get on your YouTube.
I've got my YouTube channel. I have got 92 subscribers right now.
Oh my God, right. Let's make it 94, Kaylee.
Do you do that thing though where you go, hi guys, welcome to my channel before we get started? That's what you're missing.
No, I can't.
Like all the Sephora kids.
I can't do that. I physically can't get my headspace around
You've
that.
Got two kids, mate. They should be able to. You should.
So yeah, my videos are sort of like how-to guides. And because it's so sort of amateurish, it's normally me holding a phone pointing it at the ground so you can see my finger coming.
They're the best ones though. Yeah. I like them.
Yeah, and I've got some weird ones. Like, I was doing it for a while and then I did a video about my fruit trees I've got in my garden, which I've grown espalier, which is where you grow them flat against the fence. And for some reason, that video just took off. It's got like 4,000 views now.
Is that because it's different?
I don't know. It could be. It's weird because most of you are from America as well.
What?
So I don't know if that's. Oh, it's a cute English
guy. I'm gonna go and listen because I bet you do something funny and you don't even realise it, and it's probably gone a little bit viral over there. For the do you not think?
I don't know.
Always happens.
Do you know what I'm surprised about? Because I nerd out to like organic gardening YouTube channels, and I haven't found you. I need to.
What's the deal? I'm so hidden. It's scary. That's how hidden.
I don't even know how it all works. Do you get hidden? Why are you hidden? I don't understand.
No, I'm out there. I have shared it a few times on the Raynham community group, some of my videos. So some of my followers have come from locally for that.
So if people want to listen and watch it, who are we searching?
It's now. So I've changed the name. It's now Born to Allotment.
Born to Allotment. I like that.
A pun on my name,
I like obviously. That. And why are you famous?
Oh, I wouldn't say you're super famous.
You're so modest.
For about 9 years, I worked for the Buckingham Palace. I was in charge of the rose garden there. So I looked after the Queen's roses and all kinds of other plants in that. Yeah, and I did that. I really enjoyed it. And then came home to look after my kids and obviously needed to keep the gardening buzz going. So that's why I've sort of been shouting out about allotments and gardening across Raynham until everybody's blue in the tooth from hearing about
it. It's really cool because we got to know you because you headed up a community group at Raynham Rec.
Yep.
Which was really interesting as well because you kind of viewed that through the eyes of a gardener as well, didn't you? Could you tell us a bit more about what you did when you were chair of Friends of Raynham Rec?
Yeah, I looked at it because, I mean, we all came out of lockdown, didn't it? When everybody sort of looked at the green spaces in their area and go, God, that's an amazing park.
Yeah.
And that's where that sort of came from. And I came at the start of it being where you work for Buckingham Palace, which is a, they call it a garden, but you would probably call it a park in the terms of the scale of stuff and how you do planting and how you do jobs. So I'm sort of quite used to that sort of park style gardening. So you go into the Random Reg and I just saw potential there. I saw that it wasn't just, oh, it's a group of trees around a field. They were really special trees.
Well, I can't believe that. Tell us about the trees that are there.
So there's two favourite ones. One of them is, which came out quite recently, is we've got a giant redwood. So the biggest tree on the planet is its baby. It's basically growing in Random Rec. So that's down by the train tracks.
And how old would that be?
I don't know when it was planted. I'll have to talk to the council about that. But it's probably about no more than 30 or 40 years old.
Okay.
So there's a good chance in another 30 or 40 years, we're going to be something, a tree down there that you might have a train going through it. You know, it's that size.
That's insane.
And then the other tree, which is, it's special in its own way, it's called the Foxglove Tree, which is down at the, if you know Random Rec, it's down at the towards the Wakeley Road end of it. And this is this wonderful tree that puts on these beautiful blue flowers that you look where it gets its name, it's Foxglove Tree. But then I started doing research about it, and it's a really fascinating tree. Now, it's from China and Japan. And out there, it's used from everything from musical instruments to scaffolding poles, because it's got this really great technique where if you cut it down and it grows really long, straight stems from where it comes. So they use them from poles and all kinds of stuff.
So they can be coppiced. Don't.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to use the technical term, but obviously I'm in with the experts.
Obviously I'm too clever. So you can pull that right down then and that grows back up again.
And what's also interesting, it's called a colonising plant. So if you've got a bare ground, it can basically plant in most areas. So you can just stick it somewhere and it sort of creates this sort of pioneering ecosystem that then other trees can come in and support.
Oh, wow.
And if you want a really good specimen of version one, I'm not going to tell you that because I don't want to give their house away, but there's a house along the Lower Raynham Road as you go towards Gillingham at the top of the crest. After the riverside, they've got this one in their front garden. You pick the right time of year and then you've got this big blue glow coming out of the garden. You
can get, is it like blossom then? No.
Yeah, blossom. So it's blossom. It's a springtime. I can't remember. Normally about May time you'll see that. And it gets the Foxglove name because they're like little spikes of blue flowers.
That's so nice.
And then you get these wonderful seed heads in the autumn as well, if you like your seed heads.
Can I rewind a little bit? How did you even get into this? Because I'm not being funny. Like, we all have our own little quirks and our own, like, interests and stuff. But how do you... It's really specific. Like, you gardening, trees, outdoors, nature. Like, how did you get into that?
It's bizarre. It's very late in my life. It stems from the fact that my parents weren't gardeners. So gardening was never a thing in my house.
Because they weren't gardeners.
They weren't gardeners. No, so they basically, the back garden was a space where their patio went. There was a patio chair in there and there's a lawn that my dad cut and that was it. Zero.
Yeah.
Zero, absolutely.
So did that inspire you because you wanted there to be more in the garden?
No, yeah, so it sort of grew up. I grew up and it wasn't until my 20s. And so by then I was working in my first job at the Ministry of Defence as a, like, suck in an office and it was just terrible. And I started watching Gardener's World and started getting into gardening and horticulture. And then I would spend my evenings and my days daydreaming about plants and doing that. And then there was an epiphany moment when I said, What am I doing stuck in an office, dreaming about plants and gardening when I could go out and do it?
Could go out and do it. That's so good.
And so, I mean, the key thing was my realisation that I didn't know everything about gardening. I knew enough. So I went to study at Hadlow Horticultural College over at Tunbridge.
And that you was did that as an adult?
Yeah, so 20, God, is that my age? 26, 27, that's when I left and done that. So it was 2007. And I met lots of like-minded people. And it was so great to be in that environment. I've done a lot of education in my time over the years. That was my funnest time because it was time when I was, you're passionate about the subject.
Yeah. You want to learn, don't you, at that age? Yeah. You're there because you want to be.
There's the old phrase is, you know, education's wasted on the young.
Yeah.
And I do believe that.
Yeah.
And that was a time when, you know, my homework was done all on time. It was done the day I got it. You know, that sort of level.
That's cool.
And you're sort of with so many other people who are so passionate about gardening. And yeah. And since that spurned that on and a few years later, I was working in just like a landscape gardening firm. And then my wife, Jo, found an advert in the Evening Standard saying the Queen wants...
No way.
A gardener. Well, you can do that, Stuart. I thought, no, come on, they're going to need someone like skilled and talent, with talent or something. She goes, go on, you can do it. So after some badgering, I finally put the application in, not good knowing what you was going to happen. And yeah, I got an interview, and there was... Yeah.
Interviewed with Queenie.
So who interviewed? The old Queenie?
No. She was always...
Did she pop her head in, though?
She would...
All right,
she just handed the teas out, I think, when they arrived.
She was always... there was time... So before my day, back in the day, where the old gardeners always say, she was out there, she would do a little bit of gardening. They'll find little bits of weeds on stuff. So she had potted for an hour or so, really? and cleared up. But by the time she was obviously getting on a bit, but she was still aware of what was going on, and she still knew the routine of the gardening. So if we hadn't done a job, you haven't pruned that yet, or you haven't done that, she'd be first
she'd
one to
know.
Let the garden. Yeah, she'd be looking out the window going, you haven't cut that back yet. You're normally done by now.
Yelling at you out the window.
Pretty much. And Duke of Edinburgh was just as bad. He used to go out for little walks around the garden, and he would get back. I remember the one
story. That's one hell of a boss, isn't it? To know that you've got the Duke of Edinburgh just watching over your job.
Yeah. I mean, there was one incident when, again, not to plug it, but there was a TV show done of the garden while I was there, and the Queen saw the footage of it before it went to air. And there was some footage of about the roses and the fact that we use garlic to kill the aphids on them. And so there was an image of a rose covered in this aphids. And there was a Christmas drinks where the Queen goes around and says hello to staff for Christmas and says thank you. And she, you know, randomly spoke to me, and she goes, oh, I saw that video with the aphids on there. You're telling me there's aphids on our roses? And I had to explain to her that because they couldn't find aphids, because the roses were so neat and tidy, they had to use that in a studio somewhere and actually put aphids on the roses.
No way, they faked it.
I don't know if she believed me, but that was it. Yeah, it was completely
fake. That's a great blag, Stu.
Like that. So how did you go from that? I loved it. By the way, I just love the fact that you retrained at 27. That gives hope to most people listening if they're sitting in jobs that they don't actually want to be doing. Because when we spoke to Leon in a previous episode, he basically said that he only changed his way of gardening literally about 10 years ago. And I think it's just really important to like hear that just because you do something for X amount of time doesn't mean that that's your forever. You can kind of change and grow and learn and all that sort of stuff. But how did you get from being the Queen's gardener? How did you go from that to doing all of the amazing community stuff that you do, you know, over the last 5 years, to now you have started this new... Is it new to you, allotments, or have I just completely made that up?
Yeah, no, it's new to me. So I'd never done veg growing. So I said my parents weren't gardeners, and my grandparents were, apparently, but I never knew them that well. So I didn't know. So I've never grown up with just this image of your granddad taking you to the allotment and teaching you how to grow carrots. That's the image of allotments that a lot of people
And did
have.
You not cover that at the horticulture college as well?
Yeah, but it was a little bit of fruit and veg growing, but a lot of it was actual media garden, so like parks and gardens. So I did a little bit at the palace. So obviously the then Prince of Wales, now the King, is an avid gardener in a sense. And his place there called Clarence House is an organic. It's Soil Association certified.
And does he have staff doing that?
So two of the gardeners that were in part of our team would be over in his garden. And he has a veg patch, and that was specifically geared up to give him food.
No way.
So the gardener there would be talking to the head chef of the Prince of Wales, the Prince of Wales, about what food he would want, what types of carrots he would like, and we would grow them. So obviously I wasn't over there, but I used to help with the seed growing and the seed growing. So I got familiar with that, and I got the dabbled.
Yeah, I love that.
And then I don't want to keep bringing up, but that lockdown came, and you reevaluated what your priorities were. And that's probably where a lot of my sort of community-based stuff came out from, was like, I wanted something practical. Plus, looking after kids, you can get bored watching Thomas the Tank over the years. So you need to get your mind.
You really did explode in terms of your community involvement over lockdown. Like, you did a load of good stuff, didn't you? It felt like a bit of a... I'd never heard of you before, and then suddenly you were doing some really great stuff.
Yeah, I sort of... I just arrived. Yes, we moved in 2019. So
you'd not long been in Raynham anyway.
Not long in Raynham. So COVID happened, lockdown happened, and kids were off at school or being homeschooled, and I just wanted to get out there.
Yeah.
And so once that lockdown period, we was sort of in focused on the garden, our garden. That between us as a family, that's where we spent most of the time. And that's when I thought, we had a greenhouse for the first time. So I started growing stuff in the greenhouse. And that's when I got the real buzz of growing it. And then it was my wife again spurring me on saying, I want an allotment. I want an allotment.
Does she do it with you then, does she?
She wants the allotment.
Yeah.
She wants the produce from the allotment. She knows where her skill sets lie. And so she's happy for me to do all the hard work.
This is why we're friends.
she's directing what plants, what food we're growing, but I've just got to produce it.
She's director.
She's head gardener back. She's my head gardener.
Do you want to live more sustainably, but you just don't know where to start? Did you, like me, sign up for Veganuary and accidentally buy chicken sausages on day two? Does the whole eco thing leave you feeling confused and sometimes overwhelmed? If so, this is the podcast for you. Remember to check us out on our socials on Facebook and Instagram, the Rainham Eco Hub.
Have you ever grown a turnip?
I've never grown a turnip. I don't plan to go on a turnip. I tried to convince the kids to eat Swedes once. I love Swedes.
Do you? I love Swedes.
I like mash Swede. Yeah,
I like mash Swede.
You know, neeps mash and tatties. So I've had neeps and tatties when we've had haggis.
What's
now.
That?
So when you have haggis.
Oh, God.
You have neeps and tatties as well, which is mashed potato and mashed turnips. But I've had it with Swede as well. So this is a generational thing. Did you grow up with your mum mixing in Swede in with your mashed potato? Or
Swede and carrots, my nan used to do.
It used to be like a cheap potato.
Oh, really? So, I love it. I love Swede. We had it on Sunday.
So I still love that. I mean, I still love liver and bacon and sometimes that. I know. Sorry.
They are some rough dinners you're presenting there as you're talking about it.
I'm a simple person.
That is not simple.
The only reason I ask about the turnips is because Liz... You're growing turnips, are you? Or did you want to grow turnips?
Well, no, I watch a lot of YouTube, so I want to learn more about kind of homesteading, self-sufficiency, permaculture really, really interests me. So I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and one of the bits of advice they give was like, make sure you grow what you're going to eat. And so I think it was last year I grew, it was like a pumpkin, and nobody in my family likes pumpkins. We grow... rhubarb, and everybody hates rhubarb. And so I watch with interest when people grow stuff that doesn't, you're not just, you know, delivering the only stuff that actually grows. I mean, actually, like, if you're good at it and you can pull sweet corn out and courgette and things that we actually eat, that's where I want to get to. But I'm too stupid and I don't know enough about it. And so I just keep growing stuff that nobody actually wants.
You need to get on his YouTube channel, mate.
I do. I need to watch Born to Allotment. Born to Allotment.
Also on Instagram.
Just saying.
What you did was exactly right. And that's what we done at the start of it. We sat down with it and with the kids involved, because this is all a family project, because the two of my kids have got their own plot. So they're growing what they want.
Oh my gosh.
And so we sat down and said, what do we eat? Well, we eat tomatoes. We eat lots of cucumbers, but we're out of glass house. Long term, we might get a polytunnel established. So we eat tomatoes. We love broccoli, so we're going to grow that. My son is obsessed with sweet corn, and so is my daughter, so we're going to grow sweet corn. We are growing a pumpkin, but not really to eat. My daughter wanted to grow one for Halloween, so that was the plan. So instead of buying one at the supermarket, we're going to grow our own.
Good shout.
And
pumpkin seeds, though, as well, afterwards. I'm all for pumpkin seeds.
Yeah, totally.
Then made a pumpkin soup, and everyone just passed it round, being like...
I'm a fan of pumpkin pie.
Are you?
Yeah, I am.
There is nothing that you've listed that you eat, Stu, that I would ever eat. Remind me not to go around your house for dinner.
We've got onions. We're going to have onions.
Love onions.
White and red and garlic. But we have got rhubarb there. So we were like lucky in my... Garlic, yeah.
Can you grow garlic in this country?
Garlic's one of the easiest things you can grow. Have you never seen like a clove of garlic in your kitchen that you've left for months and months and months? And
yeah, it goes
growing?
With the green shoots. Yeah. Can I plant that? No. Do you know how many of them are thrown out?
Yeah. What you do is you break it all up. So eat one clove. So it's like a bulb. So like each one of those is a bulb. So you plant that. So you get an old clove that's going out, break it up. You've got, what, six or seven plants? Stick it in. By the summer, you've got a big clump each one.
I love that.
It'd be like
Thank
a Frenchman
you.
Around your neck with all that garlic.
Gosh, you're just like handy tips.
Yeah. And we've got rhubarbs. I know you guys don't want like rhubarb, but my wife loves rhubarb.
Oh,
I'll
bring you like 800 tons of rhubarb around then.
No, worry about it. So we were lucky that the plot we took over at Blores Lane, the person who had it had some really good stuff that's already there. So we've got basically a strawberry bed.
Wow.
It just needed a bit of weeding, a bit of tidying. And we've got the biggest rhubarb bed ever. So
I bet I know what your plot is, if that's the case. Because we had an allotment down there and it was absolutely It took us months because it was full of like degraded plastic. They buried plastic bags, like the blue polythene bags. So we were clearing up for ages. And then in the end, it just didn't work out. But there was a guy who had the most insane, massive rhubarb plot. When we get off the call, when we get off this, I'm going to ask you to draw where it is. I bet I know where it is if it was an amazing rhubarb.
Yeah. So yeah, we're very excited. So we took that over in October or November last year.
Okay.
So it's actually the perfect time to take over allotment because you've got all winter really to prepare.
How long did you have to wait for it?
About a year and a half, which is a bit worrying. I mean, I know people over in Lordswood Way have been waiting 10 years.
Yeah, I was
going to
say that.
And is it in good condition? Because when we got given one in lockdown, it was awful.
It was manageable. I wouldn't say it was in a perfect condition.
And is it manageable? Sorry, no, I've just cut you off. I was going to say, is it manageable because you kind of know what you're doing?
I
take somebody of my sort of experience.
No, actually, to be honest, horticulturally, it was pretty simple. It's just a lot of physical work. There was a lot of junk that needed removing. Yeah, yeah. A lot of long grass that needed cutting down, raking out. Some of the beds were so full of grass that I know this year we're not going to do anything with it. So we just covered them in sheeting and we're going to cut off the weeds and do something with them next year. And plus, a lot with all gardening and horticulture and allotments, you don't want to bite off too much that you can chew.
Yeah, of course.
So we've got like 6 or 7 beds this year. If we know we can cope with another two, we've got another two.
And was the soil good?
Soil was amazing. What was really good and was very worrying is the guy had two massive compost heaps.
Okay.
Full of really good rotted compost. And that's the key. So we're trying a no-dig policy. So no-dig, for anybody who doesn't know, is the concept where you're not working against the soil composition. So instead of digging over your bed every year, breaking it up, you are leaving it because all those microorganisms, all the fungus and all that stuff, it's a system there. If you break it up, it doesn't transfer as quickly. What you need for no dig, though, is first of all, you can't step on anything. So you need paths around it. So raised beds are perfect for no dig. But you also need a good supply of compost because each year you've got to top up that level of soil with compost each year. And then the worms and the things bring it down and dig and bring it into
they
the soil.
They kind of dig it in, do they?
Yeah, they're, and worms are much better at double digging than any person can do it. And so you need to supply that. And so having that first big couple of compost heaps means that I was able to mulch 3 beds with compost, so we know that's good. And then hopefully I'll produce enough compost over the years to do it. And that's the problem, and half the work at the moment at my allotment is turning the compost heap to make
is
sure
it?
You should do it every 3 or 4 weeks. And if you're really good and you've got a good compost heap, you can get one in about 90 days and you've got solid compost.
Bloody hell.
So how often do you manage to get down there? Because I'm just trying to think in my head, like my dream is to have an allotment, and I realise that I have a garden and I am super privileged to have a garden. But the idea that I'm able to go, especially down in there, it's just so peaceful down there. Be able to go, sit and just work. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's just like this, that.
There's an escapism.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to get at. So in my head, I've got a crazy busy life, working, 2 kids, supporting a husband, all that sort of stuff. How, I'm thinking in my head, realistically, how could I fit it in? But I guess if you want to make it work, you kind of make it work. How does it work for you?
I think the key message here is don't do anything unless you're really committed. There's a lot of people out there who are waiting for allotment, and if you don't have the time to do it, you're taking over someone's thing. So really have a good thing, because you do have to commitment. So when I was clearing it out for the first about 4 or 5 weeks, I was there twice a week and physically doing a lot of manual work. I haven't been there. We went over there last week. Before that, I wasn't there for another 3 weeks because there's not much to do. But come the summer, come the point where I'm out there watering, there's a good chance I could be there every evening. Mm. And even if it's for an hour, that's still a big commitment to a lot of people's life. Now, we made that commitment, and we're going to make that commitment with the kids. I mean, some of them won't like appreciate me dragging them over there. But the kids kind of like it.
They'll love it, yeah. They'll remember the peaceful evenings going over there.
And we're trying to make it into a space where we might go in an evening. So long term, my wife wants a nice new shed with a little bench and stuff like that. And so she imagines us pottering there with the radio on, having a glass of wine.
You are describing the good life, Stu, now. Well, is that not?
I do think my wife looks like Facility Kendall, so it's all good.
So when you go down there, the people that are down there, is there kind of a good community? And I guess my question is you mentioned about people waiting quite a long time for allotments. Have people been there for a long time? Is the issue that you wait for people to like hand it on, and it can be however long that takes.
Yeah, you kind of...
Is that what the problem is?
The problem is the demand for allotments in Medway is huge. I mean, I did some research, and after the last year, it was, you had a waiting list of about 4,000 people.
What? And in Medway that wants allotments?
And there's about 1,000 plots. So
how is that the case then? Because didn't at one point, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, didn't everyone have an allotment at one point?
So again, this is my allotment nerd goes back. So there's a law back that dates back to 1927, and it was written by an MP called Forbe, and it sets out the basic principle of allotments. Because before then, allotments were ad hoc over the centuries. Churches had them, and I think St Margaret's has still got some knocking around. And there was never sort of a formality, and there was never no sort of right to them. And so what the rules about what you can and couldn't do it. So so he established a principle, and I forget the numbers, but I believe it's 15 plots per 1,000 members of population. So that was...
Okay, because not everybody wanted one.
So, no. So they envisioned the point where not everybody wants a plot, but everybody would have access if they could, if they wanted one. And so they did about, 15 plots. So currently, I think I remember I did the maths in Medway, it's about 8 plots per 1,000. So population growth has gone up and the plots hasn't. What's depressing when you speak to the old allotment goings, back in the 80s, allotments was dying off. We had much more many sites, but they were not popular.
More than people wanted.
No one wanted them. And you get back, imagine back that period, 70s and 80s, easy living, processed food was coming in. No one cared about...
They kind of wanted to leave that part of society behind in a way.
It goes back to what I was saying about my parents' generation. They're not natural gardeners. It was a different time. So you can understand why they were getting popular. But since, I would say, the 2000s onwards, and so in the late 90s, when people are more caring about where their food's coming from, their food miles, they want to eat. Good Life is a good example of where people wanted that. Allotments have come back in. And so I do think COVID, again, was another spur, because before COVID, waiting list in Medway was 1,000 people, and now it's 4,000.
Now it's 4,000, bloody hell.
I mean, I know that's sad, but also there's like such goodness in that, that there are 4,000 people
who want an allotment,
that do want to be able to have space to grow vegetable. I don't know, I would love to understand, is it just about going and growing your own food? Or like me, is it a really nice way that you are able to go be part of a community? Because I guess there is that there. I don't know. I've not got one. But I guess there is like some sort of like community spirit there. And I guess also you just learn stuff, I guess, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, when you speak to people, and there's so many reasons why they do allotments or they're growing their own. And what's great about allotments, and this is why my big passion, they're kind of like a silver bullet to a lot of our society's problems can be almost solved with more allotments.
This is my language, tell me.
Yeah, good. So if we go back to the basic principles of food miles, if we need to battle climate change, we need to grow more locally stuff. Allotments isn't a way of doing it. I'm not saying we're going to be self-sufficient as a nation. That's just hard to think. And no, allotments are not going to feed everybody. But every little allotment reduces it. You've got biodiversity. Now, a recent study showed that an allotment is 70% more biodiverse in insects mass
compared
to countryside, not cities, countryside.
What?
Do you know when you drive through a countryside and it goes, oh, that's a beautiful countryside? Sometimes I drive through it and I'm sort of see a wasteland.
Yeah, I do too. But only recently have I done that.
Yeah, so the amount of chemicals and stuff, mm-hmm. farmers, and I'm not blaming farmers, that's just the way they do things at the moment, but there is some good work going with more farmers going away from chemicals. Allotments are like a haven for those insects because of the variety of plants that are grown there. So people grow flowers, but they're different habitats. They're actually little self-haven for insects. And we all know insects are the building blocks to a good biodiversity area. So you've got that. Then you've got what you said about community. And I think you're right. My allotment experience is really nice. We've got a WhatsApp group. Everybody was so friendly. And the amount of times I walked out, like, what was really great was the first time we took our kids over there, we talked to the family next to us. And one of their sons literally has the same birthday as my son. Like, born on the same day.
Wow.
And they've got, and so every time Owen will go, oh, are we going to see Jack if he's going to be over there? So you've got that sense of community and spirit, and that's brilliant. And then you've got other wings like physical things, so mental well-being and health building. My goal would be love to, see, I've got this dream of a town, all towns surrounded by allotments, creating a wonderful biodiverse barrier away from those sort of farmlands. So we've got a haven of animals that people can have fresh produce in a local community. Gardening's a good form of exercise.
Oh my God,
brilliant it is. And for, you know, all studies will say that people out in environments and in nature, it's better for your mental capacity. And it's probably what you're good about, where you sort of like learning new skills, is that you sort of, you plan stuff, you think about stuff, you look about
looking
that. It keeps
future,
your mind occupied.
Yeah.
And people think about that. So I don't want to say like allotments will solve a lot of problems, but they do help.
It tackles an awful lot of,
awful lot.
Thank you for listening to the Raynham Eco Hub's Tread Lightly podcast. If, like us, you're trying to be more sustainable, then like and subscribe to get notified when we release new episodes, or even better, share with your friends and family. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, and thank you for joining us. Stay safe, keep going, and find us on socials. Cheers, guys.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.